This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Why is it that with sparkling water, I'm always playing guessing games with what flavor I'm drinking? Is it citrus? Is it aluminum can flavored? Not sure. Sparkling ice, though, they really mean flavor. Like in-your-face flavor. Orange mango, black raspberry. Don't even get me started on the strawberry lemonade. Kiwi strawberry slid right into my taste buds' DMs last night and let them know who's boss. No subtleties there and no sugar either. But it does have vitamins and antioxidants. Find sparkling ice at a major grocery store or club retailer near you. Sparkling ice. Anything but subtle.
This is Julio Rodriguez, and this is the Lookout Landing Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and congratulations as you are virtually in attendance for the 2019 Lookout Landing Seattle Mariner Awards. We're working on shortening that title, making it a little more snappy, but we have an important job to do today, and I couldn't do it by myself, as I am just one man with a very small sliver of Mariners knowledge compared to my guests today. So on one line, we have Kate Prusser of LookoutLanding.com. Kate, how is your award show vibe going right now? What do we got going on in Kate world?
It's good. I watched the Emmys last night, so I'm prepared.
Congrats.
I saw Fleabag take home a lot of well-deserved awards, which I was pleased about. When They See Us got an award, which probably should have gotten more, but that was good. I was mostly pleased. I was disappointed The Good Place did not carry home some more hardware, as that is the best show on television for my money. But it was fun, and I watched some red carpet style, and I'm ready. I'm sitting here in my bedazzled loafers and ready to pass some judgment.
That's great. I'm wearing the Jennifer Lopez dress. I look amazing. It's just green, extremely open. I'm sitting in my room by myself, so only I can see me, but it's the
feeling
that
matters. But you're flowing. You're flowing.
It's a very flowy look, yes.
Yes. And a lot of, I would imagine, junk pinching, because it looked pretty pinchy down there.
Well, you know, like I said, I'm the only one here, so I've devised a bit of a stance that allows for proper comfort.
Yeah, it's a good crouch. You're really getting the glutes activated.
I use the podcast as actually exercise, which a lot of people don't know. It's how I stay in tip-top shape.
I think we should record a full standing episode at some point. Just really see how that changes up the atmosphere.
Yeah, that's next level thinking.
But we'll see.
That analytical mind who's always pushing the envelope for traditional thinking belongs to the one and only John Troopin, joining us from the eastern shores of Mettsville. Hello, John.
Indeed. Yeah, doing well. Although you didn't ask, but it's the Mettsville's kind of having a rough one for the last 40 years, I think, but they're really picking it up. A lot of sort of Pete Alonso jerseys on the 8 people that live in the town I now live in.
Sure. Oh my god, I wish I had a Pete Alonso. That would be so fun.
It'd be good. We if you kind of mash Tom Murphy and Omar Narvaez together, you have like a weird sort of Franken Alonso, but yeah.
With a lot more defense, let's be fair.
That's fair.
In that particular mashup. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe not all the homers, but probably a better overall player.
Yeah. Yeah. You hear that, Mets fans? We're taking this from you, too.
2019 has definitely been the years of Mariners fans snatching Mets fans' wigs, and I'm here for it, to be honest.
Mm. Yes. Thank you, Mets. My favorite Met is Edgardo Alfonso.
Hey.
I just like saying his name. It's a great name.
It's a good one. Is he the one who's on? I always mix him and Arubi Eldorazo up, but one of them's an ESPN host, and I think one of them is just chilling at home.
I feel like you're definitely both making all these names up.
No, just one more time. That was Edgardo Alfonso, and this is NPR.
I'm Ira Glass.
No, this is not NPR. This is the Lookout Landing podcast, and we're just going to probably jump right into these. There's not a lot of rules. There's not a lot of criteria. We just came up with a couple award categories, and we're going to hand them out to various players, games, moments of this pretty trying season, I think is the word for it. There has obviously been some high points, but I think overall it was kind of just a repetitive kick to the face from our Seattle Mariners.
That seems right.
So I guess, you know, given the state of things here, we should probably start with the positives, because there were, as I said, some fun moments. Let's just go right into a favorite game from the 2019 season. For me, it's quite literally the first one on American soil when the Mariners absolutely decimated the defending champion, Boston Red Sox. This was a home game. They played the two games in Japan, came home for, like, American opening day, and then somehow, some way, Chris Sale was just throwing, like, 88 miles an hour, and the Mariners were just hitting the ball to Tacoma. It was amazing.
Yeah, Malik Smith, like, nearly hit a ball oppo out, right? He hit, like, a triple.
Yes.
It was, like, the first game. And then that was when the ESPN camera, like, panned to second base where they thought he was going to be, and then he yes. was on third.
Yeah, just like a puff of smoke and his helmet, like, which made it further than it did most of the season, right? Like, his helmet actually made it to second base on that one.
If right, I
impressive,
long journey.
Yeah.
Tim Beckham was also on the team, hit two home runs in that game.
Oh, yeah. All right, the feel-good story of the season. Per my report, per reports.
You know, I think nothing better encapsulates the 2019 season of, like, the initial unsustainable but initial hope and then the total crashing disappointment than Tim Beckham, because that, I mean, he got bad before he got suspended, but it was, you know, when he was just going gangbusters, it was like, maybe. Oh, yeah. No.
I have a real quick question. So, Matthew, are you looking at the box score of that game already?
I am not.
Okay. Who was the starting catcher in that game?
For the Mariners?
Yeah, for the Mariners.
I mean, the fact that you're asking me this question tells me it's weird. So, gotta be David Freitas.
It was absolutely David Freitas. It was...
Good job, Matthew.
The Thank home you. Opener, David Freitas. I, like, forgot he actually played in games for the Mariners this year.
Yeah, because that was before we had
no,
Murphy.
Sorry. Excuse me. He did not play in games. He played in game. That was the only game he played
wow.
in for the 2019
yeah.
Mariners. Wow.
It was super weird.
That was a good one, though. It was on ESPN. Like, you had just all the excitement. Like, it was ridiculous.
Yeah, it was a weird feeling all around. Mm-hmm.
And they were the defending champs too. It was you know, you actually got the satisfaction. Yeah.
I'm not sure why the Red Sox opened on the road. Now that I think about it, but I'll take it. I mean, they had the privilege of flying across the country and getting the shit kicked out of them by the Mariners.
Mm-hmm.
Should have been a 4-game sweep.
Yeah.
Oof. If it weren't for old Strick.
Ugh. Yeah. In a way, I think that opening series really portended a lot of the season for the Red Sox. Because, again, it was like, the question was, are the Mariners this good, when it should have been, are the Red Sox this bad? To which the answer is a resounding yes.
Yeah, they were a hot mess. just a real unable to capitalize on playing bad teams like the Seattle Mariners.
Right, exactly.
Which will get you. It'll catch up to you. So suddenly you look up and the Rays are 10 games ahead of you in the standings. Kate, what about you?
Most fun games. I mean,
favorite,
since the
fun,
opening
whatever.
Series was taken, I might go with the Father's Day game where... So they, I had to recap two of these games, which is why I remember, and I happened to recap both their wins when they took a series against Oakland. And the it started with Marco winning against Chris Bassett. And mm-hmm. when he just in one of the games that I think would become like a hallmark of Marco this season, which is, you know, he's not overwhelming. He's not going to overwhelm anyone. There's been a lot made about his loss in velocity. But what Marco really showed this year is that he is able to chew up some innings. So that made getting rid of Mike Leake like acceptable, because now we have Marco who can kind of step in and take that role. And, you know, he's not going to be that front of the... He's been pushed into sort of an ace-like role that really doesn't fit him. But now I think we're starting to see Marco evolve into who he should be, which is, you know, that steadying force. Somebody's going to go out there, give you a solid outing. Yeah, he's going to give up some runs. But as long as his offense backs him up, like, that should be a good night at the park most times. So that was the first game of the series. And then the Sunday was Father's Day, where they won, and Malik's had a good game, I believe. Yes. Malik's homered, I think, to get the team on the board. And then he had, like, the great moment in the dugout where he's like, "Hi, Dad." I don't know. It was just warm. It was an overall, like, good team effort, and... It felt really good to take one from the A's, who I cannot stand.
I think,
and that was June. Like, that was well after the terrible slump of May. So it really felt like it was kind of getting the season back on track, showing that they weren't the terrible team that had been in May. I think that the 2019 Mariners are a lot better team than anyone is ever going to give them credit for being. Like, yes, they were terrible in a lot of ways, but I think that crash after the bright start really flipped a switch for a lot of people, and people missed, like, the fact that they came back and they weren't that bad. They weren't one of the absolute worst. Like, and when they were flawed, they're young, they're, you know, Kikuchi, mistakes were made, but I think that ultimately, like, there's a lot more hope in this team, and I especially feel that coming down the stretch, like, the way that they've been finishing, I don't feel as despondent about this team as I think a lot of people do.
It was definitely easy to sort of check out, and I think it has been nice that, like, in the end, like, the people who, I guess at the start you had sort of the older guys who were not going to stick around, keeping them propped up to some degree, and then at the end, the sort of resurgence in interest has been led by younger guys who now are going to be around, and you just kind of had a middle where it was a lot of people who were pretty clear fill-ins that, you know, weren't really getting it done, but it didn't really matter so much. You know, if Wade and Tommy Malone are getting shelled, you know, twice a week, it's, you know, it sucks, but it's relatively not going to hurt as much.
Right, like, I recapped yesterday's game, which was a loss to the Orioles, which should have felt very bad, but it was Marco had 7 really strong innings, Art Warren had a scoreless inning, Kyle Lewis had a hit, you know, a lot of the guys, it was just, like, they couldn't quite come up with the hit that they needed in the moments where they needed it. Kyle Seager doubled, like, there were... The people who you wanted to see contribute did contribute. It just didn't add up to a win. So I think that that's a good, like, process versus results thing. Like, the results are not always going to be there. And I think that this is something that they're preaching up and down throughout the organization, getting it at all the levels. Like, stick to your process. The results aren't always going to show up, but you continue to have faith in the process. Continue to do things the way that you know you're supposed to do them in and out. Don't let a momentary failure or setback shift your whole plan. And I feel like I've heard Kyle Lewis say that multiple times when people have asked him, "How are you being so successful?" And, you know, he says, "I keep it simple and I try to stick to my process," whatever. So I like the idea that it's not quite there now, but there's a plan in place and everyone knows what they're working to. They know what they're supposed to be doing. Maybe they don't do it all the time, but they know what the desired result is and how to get there. So it makes even things like a lousy loss to Baltimore feel like okay.
Right, and I mean we keep kind of touching on it, sort of the dichotomy of the beginning of the season versus the rest of it, which is like 85% of it, if not more. But something that I've been working to confirm, and I don't know, you guys might need to help me out on this. The Seattle Mariners started 13-2. Is that? Do we know if that's fact?
I don't know. Let's consult Bob Nightingale.
I will not.
Bob, you anywhere? Are you anywhere, Bob? Can you inform us?
I believe he's busy writing alternating eulogies for the Cubs and Cardinals at the moment.
Or reporting that, like, I don't know, Matthew Robertson is the new manager of the Royals. Like, he's going to be so wrong.
Yeah, I hope you lift that porn ban on them.
I will absolutely lift the porn ban.
No, day one. No John Harvey Kellogg are you.
Your campaign slogan.
I'll have a white claw in every pot.
It's amazing. This year, I mean, I've always known Nightingale was bad, and like, I felt personally angry towards him when he reported that the Mariners were like the front runners to get Ohtani. I knew that as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh no, we're definitely not getting him. And then it turned out to be the truth. So, I mean, it's been a laugh that he's bad at his job or whatever, but kind of this year, I really have very little patience for it anymore. I cannot believe he has a job. He should not have a job. Like,
well, it's interesting because he's wrong about 70% of the time.
Yes.
And like 30. So because it's not even like a coin flip. It's like,
I mean, that's baseball, baby.
Yeah, put him in the hall. That's fair.
Fails 70% of the time.
That's fair. You know what?
So depressing.
I took it too literally a little bit, but you know, there you go.
All right, so apart from maybe some Bob Nightingale tweets, I'm curious if you guys have a favorite like under the radar moment, something that maybe the casual fan has forgotten or didn't know existed in the first place, because there's been a lot of those sort of blips on the radar. I mean, with 67 different players, it's easy to kind of have like one moment or even like 5 minutes of the season that were really fun for that person, and then the rest kind of fell apart. So for me, to get maybe your collective juices flowing, thinking of favorite moments, one of mine that happened to come during a game that I was recapping, so that helped, was the Ryan Court game, which was July 27th against the Tigers. Ryan Court was making his first start in the big leagues after like 8 years in the minors, and he went 2-for-5 with 3 RBI, and the Mariners won handily. And it was a nice reminder that even in the face of the worst season in a very long time, that the Mariners can still manage to do some fun things. And like, this would have been the season, if any season, for like the guy who played 8 years in the minors to come up and like immediately foul a ball off his foot or something. And he did the opposite of that. He flourished for a little bit. I don't think we're going to see much of Ryan Court ever again, so I'm glad that he got this one moment. It was at home too, and his family was all there, and they were playing the Tigers, who are truly, truly abysmal. So that was one of my favorite ones to see sort of in the middle of the season too, when like a lot of people had checked out, understandably, for a late game in July against the Tigers to have some intrigue. I would like to thank Ryan Court for that and bestow upon him like a $10 Subway gift card or something. Something that feels fitting of this award show.
I think that is a nice choice, and mine would be linked to that, I think, which similar, Tim Lopes coming up and getting concussed in his first major league game, that was horrible, or his first major league at bat. I guess I think he was a defensive replacement before. But anyway, in his first at bat, he gets concussed, game where he was batting. And it was so sad to me. Like, here's somebody who has played for so long and waited for so long for his chance. And so, like, when he came back and started being a valuable player and getting solid hits and stuff, I mean, that was such a huge... I was so happy for him. And when he had a great catch that wound up on quick pitch or whatever in the outfield where he's never played. So I think that kind of stands out to me. It's just, there's not one moment exactly, although maybe the fact that he got you know, nationally shouted out for a catch in the outfield when he's been an infielder. I'm really happy for Tim Lopes.
So, I would say my favorite under, it's not, it wasn't necessarily under the radar at the time, but considering that the entire stretch of the season it happened in was under the radar, when Mike Leake almost threw a no-hitter and ended up throwing a complete game shutout like right before getting traded, that was legitimately one of the funniest like experiences I've ever had watching a baseball game, where like he struck out Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani, like did not give up just any hard contact, like one walk and a like shitty ground ball single to Luis Rengifo and nothing else from literally Mike Leake. So that was like, in terms of a moment that just I will remember laugh, like just out loud laughing at every successive out.
And that was after the Angels no-hit the Mariners on Tyler Skaggs night.
Immediately after.
Yes.
Like, one week to the day,
they had a like a mirror like series. Like, they had been in L.A., and then they were maybe back in L.A.? I actually don't remember if it was in Seattle or L.A., but, like, just outrageous.
Right. It felt a little like a tilting of the scales by the baseball gods. They were like, you know, we kind of had to do that other thing.
Right.
Sorry. We know you guys aren't as bad as the Angels. So here's this readjusting of the scales. We're going to let Mike Leake strike out the greatest player of all time a bunch of times. Sure.
And then in the top of the ninth, the baseball gods went for a cigarette, and that's when Mike Leake blew it. That was another game that I was recapping, so I will definitely, like, that's going to be one of the more memorable, I think the most memorable for me, just in terms of the circumstances, was the game in Japan, like the very first game, because just watching the Mariners at 3 in the morning isn't really something you forget.
Right.
But the Mike Leake game, I was recapping, and I don't know about you guys, I definitely approach games that I'm recapping differently based on like all the factors, obviously. Like, so I'm looking at it, I'm like, okay, Mike Leake is pitching, the Angels destroyed us last week, like Mike Trout was fully healthy, fully hitting the crap out of the ball, so I didn't really like pay much attention, you know what I mean? Like the first four innings or so, I'm like doing other things, you know, like one eye on the game, one eye on Twitter, whatever. And then I hear Dave Sims, like, because he mentions it early whenever there's a no-hitter or a perfect game, he'll let you know. So I was like, all right, this is something to watch. And then, like John said, I was, like, just dying laughing at how this was happening. Because he's, like, he was making, like, Mike Leake pitches, but they're still not, like, great pitches. You know what I mean? Like, he was throwing, like, belt high 88, and it would, like, just miss the barrel. And then one thing that I specifically remember was at the end of the game, his outfield was Dylan Moore, Malix, and Domingo Santana, who are all terrible defenders. I mean, Dylan Moore, bless his heart, just not an outfielder, you know?
Yeah. Like, no.
Yeah.
He can handle the glove, but not in left field in a perfect game, maybe. And then there's that one, the classic image of Domingo looking for a fly ball in that game, and the camera catches him, like, palms up, like he has no idea where the ball is.
The story in four four stages. Just a complete disaster. Yeah.
Yeah, and an unbelievable exit interview from Mike Leake, really, is what that was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there wasn't quite the, like, 2016 moment where Joel Peralta just struck out Mike Trout, literally, like, on an 87-mile
I've forgotten about
right
that.
Because, like, that's the, like, quintessential, just, like,
hilarious,
pointless but hilarious moment. Like, he was the, like, closer or, like, a main high-leverage person. He was, like,
Joaquin Benoit.
Yeah, who sucked. Yeah. Who taught Edwin a bad slider and then sucked.
Yeah.
Like, Edwin had to, like, learn a good slider the next year. Like, Joe Wieland was around. Like, So that was, I think, at least when coming to mind for this, I think that was the moment that stood out for me.
That's a great answer. Never forget that Mike Leake was on the Mariners for a sneaky long time and threw a lot of innings, because that's all he does, is he just goes out and throws the baseball. I wouldn't even say that he's like I was trying to think of a good word to describe him. Like, he's better than mediocre,
extant.
But he's not great. So it's
extant.
He's just the guy at your office who does his job and, like, talks to absolutely no one, and then you look up and you're like, oh, it's been 7 years, and Mike still works here. That's how I feel about Mike Leake, who I love. Yeah. I don't want this to border on hate for Mike Leake. It's all love, no funk on my end here. Let's move to an award that I put in our little shared Google Doc here, because I'm curious what you guys think about this. I want to know who the most lovable player on the 2019 Mariners is for y'all, because a lot of these people are new. A lot of them probably won't be here next year, so this feels like a very like time capsule-y roster. Like, obviously don't pick Kyle Seager unless, you know, you have some really important thing to get off your chest about Kyle Seager. Like, we all know who Kyle Seager is. We all will remember him for years beyond 2019. But for me, like, because we were introduced to him this year, in many ways. I mean, he was brought to the organization this year and then made his debut with us. I'm going to take as my most lovable player one Shedrick Long.
Because good call.
I think a lot of it, too, is
all love, no water.
Yeah. Shed Long, who famously in an interview on the record said that he does not drink water, which seems troubling for a professional athlete. But he's proven us wrong time and time again. I think a lot of the reason for my love for him is, like, just based on his stature. Like, it's almost, like, parental, I feel like. Like, I want to nurture him and see
him
grow.
Protect
him. Yeah, protect him. Like, it's a lot of that. And then when he hits his massive home runs like he did in Pittsburgh, then it's, like, that ultimate parent moment where, like, all the other kids didn't, like, they underestimated him. They slept on my boy, and then he hit a 450-foot home run. Like,
such
I knew he could do it.
Such a conundrum of physics. Him and Dylan Moore both. Shed Long has an ISO of, like, 200, and I think Dylan Moore's is close to that. Both of them checking in the 180s weight-wise.
Well,
Shed
Long just, like, swings like it. Like, Shed Long swings as though he is putting everything that his entire body, like, his pinky toe is going to be on this swing.
Shed thinks, like, he's Cody Bellinger, for sure.
He,
like, he doesn't see any reason why he can't put up Cody Bellinger numbers.
No, and we should expect it of him. You know, this probably, I mean, he probably has had a debut season about, like, what Cody Bellinger did, so, you know, nowhere to go but up.
Yeah, no one checked the numbers on that. It's true. one of the better rookie seasons of all time, and that's how we're going to remember Shed Long. So no one think anything otherwise. What about y'all? Who's your most lovable player that
most
you want to just squeeze and snuggle for all of eternity?
Potentially it might just be going the opposite end of the spectrum, but I will say Domingo Santana. We haven't really gotten to see Domingo for, like, pretty much the second half of the season. Like, they basically shut him down, understandably, once he, you know, he had, like, the elbow injury, and they were trying to, like, DH him and see if teams would still trade for him at the All-Star break, and then no one would, understandably. So they were just kind of getting him. But, like, he just had so much easy power, especially early in the season, and obviously the defense was disastrous, like comically disastrous, but the way that he could just slap a base, get under a baseball and just make it disappear, combined with sort of the way that he seemed to genuinely get elated by, like, he's in there on the, like, hype circle, like the jump circle when they at the end of the dugout,
the neighborhood,
the guys at Homer. Yeah, the neighborhood. And, like, he's, like, I just remember Dylan Moore hit his first career homer, and he, like, there's a gif I made of him just, like, coming over after everyone and just, like, giving him a big headlock and noogie and just, like, walking away, like, beaming, just, like, look at what the little one did. Like, hooray! Hooray for Dylan! I don't know, I found him delightful. I'm sad he ultimately didn't have, you know, that much success and that he'll probably be traded, but God, I loved watching him play offense, not defense.
Yeah, it's an important caveat for sure. He also, we talked about the physics of Shed's swing. Domingo has a weird, swing too, where like it looks like he's gonna break his
wrist.
It's
really wristy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't understand how that works power wise. Like, and he also like ditched batting gloves at one point. It looked very like 1960s for a second. Very strange.
He looks like he's trying to sort of be a like swing like a T-Rex might.
which is
a weird choice, but like he really. So I'm a larger fellow, not quite as big as Domingo, but I remember distinctly being accused at one point by a coach of mine of being a two hitter in a four hitter's body, and swing like having a very contact oriented like slap kind of swing, and I feel like Domingo just weirdly does that where he's like he in his mind he's like this is the like either like compact swing, and he still strikes out like 29% of the time somehow, but in his head he is like the sort of speedy slap hitter and the ball just goes too far sometimes.
Kate, do you have a most lovable 2019 Mariner that you would like to stump for in this upcoming election?
Well, I would like to stump for, I can't really because of the rules that you laid out, but D. Gordon would have been high on my list just because I know that offensively he has been disappointing two of the 3 years he's been here. I know that he's kind of being squeezed off as far as having a place on the team. And I know that you can't quantify chemistry or whatever people say, but I think D has such a huge role to play leadership-wise, and I don't think we see it outside the clubhouse all the time, and D certainly won't talk about it himself, but, you know, DePoto mentioned this a little bit as far as, like, the African-American community that they've built in the clubhouse. They have the highest percentage of African-American players on any 40-man roster. And just kind of the leadership he's shown to those younger guys. Maybe I don't find him totally lovable, but I love him. And I think that he loves on the other players, and he's a huge reason why those guys genuinely seem to like each other and pull for each other. And I mean, they could be so down after this season, but you know, they've got the celebration circle when someone homers, they lifted up Kyle Seager. You know, they were so happy for him when he started succeeding, and you know, it's just, I think it's moving to see and important. I think it plays an important role. But as far as most lovable, the one I would like to pinch and squeeze and cuddle, I have to say Omar Narváez.
Yes, he's very cuddly.
He's so cuddly. And kind of related
just
the
cheeks.
He's just, I mean, and his baby is so cute, and he loves his baby, and loves that his baby looks like him. I mean, he's got such a sweet and fun personality. And again, related to the African-American players, they did African-American Night and took a picture afterwards. And, you know, Omar and Domingo are both part of that, the hood. It's all the players of color, essentially, who make that circle and embrace whoever has just done a good thing, which I think is a really cool bit of leadership to have. And I would challenge you to look at any other clubhouse or any other group of guys and see that around baseball, which is cool in a sport that is historically pretty white. So that is neat to see. But when they took the picture afterwards, Omar was so mad that he had been left out of it. I don't know if he, like, didn't understand why he wasn't part of the African-American panel or what, but he was like, why'd you take this picture without me? And then on his Instagram, he drew himself in as a stick figure, and he drew Domingo in as well, and he said, like, now we are talking, and he's just, like, always the guy who responds to everybody else's Instagram. Like, he leaves these really sweet comments on everyone else's Instagrams. Like, he's got a really big heart, you can tell. And he's so happy to be here. He wants to be good. I want him to be good. Like, obviously, the bat is there. The defense, I really hope, takes a step forward. They've only had him for a year. They've only been working with him for a year. The White Sox are terrible. Terrible. At developing catchers, so I'm crossing my fingers that all of that comes together, but absolutely I love Omar Narvaez.
White Sox, terrible. Mariners, aight.
Aight. That is a reference to the infamous Kyle Lewis Instagram video where he instructed all of us not to smoke hookah because it's terrible for you, and not to drink liquor because it's terrible for you, but wine, aight.
Really begs the question, too, because Kyle Lewis, I mean, pretty much only hanging around other Mariners minor leaguers, so who...
Out there is smoking hookah.
Yeah.
I don't want to know. I'm hoping the answer is no one, but so that seems like a deliberately seems like it could really ruin your ability as a professional. It seems like the worst thing you could choose to do as a professional athlete. Who
wait till you hear about chewing tobacco? It's everywhere.
I mean, that's bad, but like hookah is your respirate, right? Yeah. I don't know. I'd like to believe maybe it was Nick Rumbelow. I could see Nick Rumbelow believing in hookah, and maybe it was him. So let's imagine it's someone who's not here anymore.
Yeah, Nick Rumbelow, if you're listening, please pass the hookah. All right, I like that answer. Good work all around. All right, what if we now transition to the sadder part? This is where everyone can pivot to whatever their coping mechanism of choice is as we sort of sink into really the peak of Marinerdom, which is the one thing that we're all sort of familiar with and comfortable with, which is the Mariners being bad. So let's just, you know, put our head down and get through this portion of the show. This could be like almost the in memoriam part of the award show where we don't want to spend too long on it, but we need to acknowledge that it happened sort of thing.
I want to go first because I feel like you guys might have the same answer.
Okay.
And I know for a fact that mine will be different.
Okay. Introduce the category and then tell us who you have winning it.
So most disappointing, I have Domingo Santana. Sorry, John.
Okay.
I'm so disappointed in Santana. I had such high hopes, and I am worried about, I don't like the swing. I'm worried about the contact issues. Defensively, he has been a nightmare. I mean, maybe you could put Vogel back. I don't know, deal him, look for someplace else, DFA him, whatever. Put Santana in at DH, but I feel like that's such... Like, you look at him and you're like, he's so athletic. Why can't he work this out? And the level of hope I had for him versus what he's doing now, I think that makes him the most disappointing for me because I just expected a lot more. And when DePoto gave his like state of the team town hall address, Domingo Santana's name did not come up at all. So I feel like it's a very, if they can find a taker, and I feel like whatever they trade him for is going to feel like a very low return. And I think that there's a really good chance he goes somewhere else and just blossoms. And then we're all like, why not here? Well, it'll be like a Chris Taylor situation or whatever. So that's kind of my worst case scenario for how things shake out. But I definitely feel like he's not a Mariner in 2020.
I will say, to defend my boy just a little bit, I think that the injury really robbed him of a chance to make that next level of adjustment because he started off so hot offensively and then was slumping for a while. He had a couple of different stretches where he had a slump, picked it back up, slumped again, and he was definitely on a slump when he got hurt, and I would have been interested to see a full year of him instead of just, you know, half a year, especially with how catastrophic the defense was for the first stretch. I will say, Matthew, do you have something in mind specifically that you are really fervent about?
I'm not fervent about it, but I have a clear winner in this category. So yeah, you go first, and I'll tell you if it matches.
Yeah, I mean, it's Yusei Kikuchi.
It sure is, yeah.
Which, yeah, it again feels bad because it was so exciting to have him brought in, and especially, I mean, this offseason, one of the things we talked about was that it felt good to see the team making an investment in a player for the present and the future like this, that it was the kind of move that leaned towards we're actually, you know, looking to make this a reasonably competitive turnaround and not make this a disastrous, or not disastrous, but a wretched to watch.
Like a 5-year typical rebuild.
Exactly. You know, which is not to say that that wouldn't have worked, but if you can do it in a different way now that is still compiling talent while also getting incrementally better at the big league level, that's more pleasant as a fan. And Kikuchi just could not deliver that this year. And I think there's a great chance that he still shows something better than he was, but because, you know, he throws at a velocity that is, it's difficult to really struggle if you can throw that hard and you have as good of off-speed pitches as he will sometimes show. But, you know, he and Justice Sheffield, I think, are two sort of, not peas in a pod, but are two very similar types of players in that, you know, they have that really impressive toolbox and they were not able to get to it consistently this year. And I'm hopeful that the challenge this year in a relatively low stakes environment leads to sort of more, not necessarily more focus, but just a focus on the right things that'll let him succeed more easily and be more effective next year and going forward, because he had some of the more exciting starts of the season. It just was drowned out by so much struggle, and that was tough to watch.
Yeah, we don't need to harp on it too much. That was definitely my pick as well. It's really disheartening because we had sort of the reversal of this recently, where the big ticket free agents had been really fun, like obviously Cano and Cruz being the main two, and then, you know, you miss out on Ohtani, obviously, but get another very sort of shiny, like, toolsy prospect. Like, obviously, Kikuchi doesn't hit, but all the reports coming out of Japan were that his stuff was incredible. I mean, he's still very young. He was very, like, the makeup report was good. He didn't seem like he would be, you know, too overwhelmed by the move or whatever, and he picked Seattle because he liked the vibe, basically, and he said he liked trees and mountains and referred to Ichiro as Mr. Ichiro, who was like a man in the sky, I believe was the direct translation.
Yes,
like,
that was it.
Like a mythical deity. So all that seems so great. And then he really just struggled. There's no way around it. I mean, he set the Major League Baseball rookie record. And folks, Major League Baseball is old as hell. He set the Major League Baseball rookie record for most home runs allowed. And obviously there are circumstances for that. No one was hitting home runs at this rate ever, but he still was just getting the middle of the plate way, way too much, mm-hmm. which if you had to pick sort of one, like,
area to not get.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's the one tangible struggle. It's been that.
And also that, like, like anybody yeah. else would have been, any other rookie would have been optioned down, right? That just mm-hmm. wasn't something they could do with him this year.
That's true.
Or that they wanted to do. Yeah. But, you know, if it was a typical, like, brought up through the minor leagues, non-international free agent mm. signing, I feel like that it definitely yeah. would have been someone who would have been optioned.
Yeah, and we should mention, too, that there was a lot of off-the-field stuff that you just really can't ignore. I mean, the move, obviously, like adjusting to Major League Baseball and an entirely new country and culture, and then he also had the death of his father and then the birth of his child all during the season, which, mm-hmm. I mean, I can only imagine, but that can't be something that would help.
Leo
would
Daniel Kikuchi.
Yeah. Amazing name choice, honestly. And even if Daniel Vogelbach never matches the success of this year, just that legacy for me is enough to carry on his name. I mean, literally and figuratively, carry on his name forever and ever.
So, yes, Kikuchi is very disappointing. I have a lot of hope just because of some things that I think we're complicating this year, not just the off-field stuff, but remembering the fact that he came with a team of his own analysts that he's had forever. Boris gave him some analysts, some people telling him what to do, and then he's got the Mariners. And then beyond that, he's seeking his own information. Like, he's seeking out Trevor Bauer to talk to. He's trying to look at, like, what Marco and Wade and Tommy Malone and the other lefties in the rotation are doing.
Other pitchers whose names we can't remember.
Yeah. He's looking at his fellow pitchers and trying to, like, take things from them or think about what they're doing. And I think it was information overload a lot for him. And he is a person who's highly analytical and he likes information, but just, like, the processing of that, it's almost like the Mike Zunino thing where he never got on one specific plan to follow because there were so many different things coming at him year after year. So he's another one. I think this offseason is going to be huge. I think the Mariners' ability to sell him on listening to them and not listening to the Boris people or maybe his people that have been part of his team forever, which is a scary thing to depart from. It's going to be a real test of how much cred they have built up with their players, if they can get them kind of streamlined. Because I believe in the Mariners' pitching coaching. I believe that it can get pitchers on the right track. But can they sell it is the question.
Yeah, that is definitely something to look for in the offseason.
That's why they got to make a big move. They need to go for it. Well, that's for an offseason podcast.
Before we move on, the Zunino thing that you brought up is interesting, too. Not only just sort of the incredible avalanche of information, but also made me think of how this year might have looked different if he had been throwing to Mike Zunino or just a different catcher in general. Not that, you know, Narvaez isn't just completely useless, but he's not a defensive catcher. And I think that that would have at least, like, if he had Jeff Mathis.
They figured out too late he needed to be throwing to Tom Murphy all the time only. So that's another aspect. I think if he had been throwing to Tom Murphy in the first half of the season, things might look a little different as well. But a little different.
And I really do wonder, actually, like, what they will be doing next year with that. I know we don't want to get too in the weeds on this, but, like, they are going to be pitching pretty much exclusively starting pitchers who they are hoping are going to be there for quite some time next year. Like, the rotation will be Kikuchi and Marco and Justice and Justin Dunn and, you know, probably some other young players pretty soon. And, like, we watched a lot of could-be strikes at the bottom of the zone get lost, and especially if you have a bunch of ground ball pitchers, which not all the guys are coming up, but some of them are. That's a really, especially for, like, Sheffield and for Kikuchi, who are trying to work at the bottom of the zone so much, that's such a hard thing. So I wonder if they will try and make some sort of move there. You know, obviously Murphy would be fine, but what they might do to try and better set those guys up for success.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating. Okay, let's do one more bummer, and then we'll end on some funny ones. Someone, I'm guessing this was Mr. Troopin, someone snuck this one into our Google Doc. The personal low point of the season for you. That's a fun little thought exercise. I couldn't really pinpoint one, but I remembered sort of when it was, and then when I went back and looked on Baseball Reference, I was like, okay, yeah, that matches. And it was when the Mariners went 3-13 in early to mid-May. And it wasn't just the losses. It was this stretch included losses by the scores of 14-1, 11-2, and they lost to the Twins 18-4.
Oh, that was a rough one. Yeah.
Brutal. And that's when it became apparent that, like, not only was this team bad, which we kind of knew, like, that just reinforced it, but then it really showed you, like, how far away they were.
Yeah, it was when the run differential got, because initially the run differential, they started losing and the run differential was still fine, and then those specific losses that you're talking about just absolutely blew the run differential out the water. So,
yeah, and they were playing good teams, too, and it was just, like, a very stark reminder that, like, those teams are running laps around the Mariners right now.
Even
the Red Sox, who we started off by making fun of, like, they were the ones who provided the 14-1 loss. This was Mother's Day weekend when they were in Fenway, coincided with this stretch, and the Mariners looked so bad that whole weekend.
As in attendance for those games, and it was delightful because it was my first time at Fenway, and because they had just called up Shed and JP, was otherwise pretty brutal.
Yeah, so that's when I decided that, like, maybe don't, like, you know, don't live and die with the Mariners as much as you have in the past, because it's just going to be a lot of death, basically, which is, I guess is useful in a way. Like, I think every sports fan, and this can apply to life, too, if you want to make it deeper, but, like, there's a point in a lot of things that you love where you realize that, like, maybe you're harming yourself, and I think that comes up every season with the Mariners. This one just happened to be in mid-May, which is usually not the time that I'm ready to check out yet, but you know, life comes at you fast, as they say.
I think mine probably was right around in that same stretch. The Cubs games to right at the sort of turn of April and May were, I think, also there, because I was very excited for those games, because I liked, you know, I like when the Mariners sort of face some premier teams. But they, like, blew one of, and I think they'd just been blown to hell by Texas a couple times.
Texas was good.
Yeah, and Brandon Brennan had been a really nice bright spot, and then he got lit up. Well, and got lit up in one of the games.
He got lit up prior to him being hurt, I believe.
And just, like, in the Cubs series, and then they just got, Marco just got obliterated.
That was awful.
And it was just, like, okay, like, I'm ready, like, we're in the bad part, like, there's no sort of turning back. They were still, I think, over 500 at that point, but it was, like, it was very clear, like, upcoming was Cleveland and the Yankees and Boston and that whole stretch that Matthew just alluded to. And it was just, like, I remember just, I think I was listening to one of those games and walking around Green Lake and just thinking, like, I don't want to watch this. I don't want to consume this. And, like, that's very rarely the case for me. Like, I'll watch shitty baseball and still enjoy it, especially when it's the Mariners. And it was just like, there's nothing here for me. This is all darkness.
Yeah. Smart move by the Mariners, too, to sneak in the 21-1 loss on a Seahawks Sunday when no one was paying attention.
God,
that was a low point.
Felix versus Garrett Cole, I believe.
A Crawford Box home run away from getting perfect gamed 21-0.
Right.
Yep. That was awful.
Which would have been, I mean, it already is, but if they had gotten perfect gamed and lost by 21, that's the worst loss ever. Like,
I mean, it already was the worst loss ever, franchise-wise.
Well, by them, but, like,
but, like, in the history of baseball.
Because they've already been no-hit twice this year?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have.
I forget who one of them was. I know one of them was the Angels one. Well, the other one I just 100% have put out of my mind.
Yo, boy, me too, now that I think about it. Who was the other person that no-hit us? Was it another combined one?
I think it was a two-person one, maybe.
Were they?
They got no hit by the Angels, and they got no hit by the Astros.
Oh yeah, it was the Astros. Yeah, that was when Aaron Sanchez started.
Yeah.
Oh fuck me!
Which
sucked.
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah. That was so. Combined no hitters don't count. I'm sorry, they don't count.
Yeah, not nearly.
Shots fired at Kevin Millwood.
Yeah, they don't count. Sorry. A no hitter is the whole hard part of the no hitter is going the distance, like. It's being able to throw strikes in the eighth inning. So,
I'm actually kind of with you on this. It's just not that. I'm a big fan of complete games and shutouts, and just generally, like, a starting pitcher going deep in a game is very interesting to me. And, like, that it is that sort of, like, one person that you get that one-on-one experience that you don't always get highlighted otherwise in baseball. I think that's I'm not. I won't go with you on the drop third strike rule. I will go with you on this one, though.
You're so wrong, but okay. What's next, Matthew? Oh, wait, I didn't give my personal low point.
Yeah, hit us with a quick personal low point.
It actually is the other day. It's watching Austin Adams tear his ACL whatever it was that he did. I mean, damage his ACL.
Yeah.
I have not done this in a long time, but I stood at the TV and I screamed, no, like the power of my voice could reverse it. And the reason why is I love Austin Adams. I think he is super fun. I love his whole, like, gum-chewing swagger on the mound. I think he's an absolute steal that, that again, proves the superiority of the Mariners' ability to develop pitching just by being like, hey, throw this good pitch more and this bad pitch less. Which
Andy's the best. Andy's the best Austin Adams when we had that fun match.
Yeah, he was the superior Austin Adams. I mean, he's overall been, and my dad loves him, and it's been hard to get my dad to like get invested in the team. Like, my dad's so, he still believes in, like, you know, he wants them to win every time he watches. Obviously he does. And we've had a lot of conversations about the step back. And every time I talk to him and, you know, the Mariners have played and lost, he's like, I know, draft pick. Like, I've been trying hard to get him on board with, like, the minors and everything that's happening there. But, you know, Austin Adams was a really easy thing to sell him on. He loved Austin Adams. And so just seeing him go down was crushing for me, but also, like, crushing, I know, for my dad. And also, that eliminates the two kind of, I think, most fun things, because Connor Sadzek is also down.
Mm-hmm.
And those were kind of, I thought, like, the two things, like, hey, we can get guys from other places and make them better. And I still think, or Brandon is a good example too. All three of those guys have been hurt, which sucks, but I think all three are good examples of like, hey, we can maximize value from teams that maybe don't see the value in these players as much as we do. So I think it's a good argument for the Mariners' ability to develop pitching. I think the pitching development is in a better place than it's ever been. And so just that ending really felt like, did you need to kick us while we were that far down? Like, I don't think you did. So yeah, that was a low point for me.
That was tough. It's like when a television show will kill off one of your favorite characters right at the end of a season. And it's like, you expect me to come back now? Like, of course not. This is where I leave you. So these last eight games could have a real tree falls in the forest kind of feeling to them. All right, let's get to another award that I'm excited about. One of the perks of watching your team lose over and over again is you can start to develop strong opinions against the teams that they're playing, or the players that are constantly just stealing our players' lunch money. So this award is called Best New Enemy, in which I'm assuming we are all going to pick either a team or, more specifically, one player or one coach, I guess, whatever you want to do, who you've decided that you now hate irrationally. So I know my answer. I think a lot of people who are familiar with my brand.
We're gonna save you for last, Matthew. I'll go first.
Kate, go first.
I will go with Luis Ranjifo from the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, California, USA, world.
The Angels.
Yeah, he is super annoying because he used to be a Mariners prospect. He was dealt away because during the period where, like, DePoto was trading from the low parts of the farm in order to get MLB-adjacent players who could hopefully help push us over the edge. But unfortunately, those players that he was traded for were Mike Marjama, who is no longer in baseball. He is retired, and when he tried to come back, was busted for PEDs and banned. And Ryan Garten, who is in Tacoma, I think, and just
hasn't ever had a pretty good year in Tacoma. He played one game this year, I think.
Did he?
I believe he was in that Sporkle quiz.
I happen to have this.
Two games, three innings this year. And then they snuck him back through waivers. And he threw 65 innings in AAA this year.
Yeah, not so bad. Yes, he had an ERA of 12 in his three innings. Anyway, so that was who Luis Ranjifo, who has meanwhile turned into a very productive little player for the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, California, USA, who is, I don't think they're that good at player development. I gotta be honest. They're certainly not good at pitching development or keeping their pitchers healthy. But player development, it just feels like they kind of lucked into Trout. They have Joe Adell, who's going to be a nightmare for us coming up through the system, who, again, is just, like, probably good drafting, freakish talent. One of those high-risk, high-ceiling picks that is just panning out for them. It annoys me. I'm annoyed. And I'm annoyed that Luis Renjifo, who, I don't know, maybe got it when he went to Tampa Bay for a while and got helped out there. Who knows? But he's going to haunt our dreams for a while in as an Angel, and that's frustrating. Hate him.
I think that's pretty good. Definitely the entity that made me the most, like, angry this year was the New York Mets. Was that yours?
No. I'm just saying.
No, like, what I are you? Obviously, the enemy has to be a divisional opponent, or no, at least not in the league.
Absolutely not.
How are they our enemy? We crushed them in that
trip. He's my
enemy.
Okay,
all right. I'm
my enemy.
I'm
was
shutting
just
up.
Saying no because I love the Mets, and I don't want anyone to speak badly about them.
Well, so here's the thing. I've definitely become a Mets fan because I'm living now in New York.
And you're a traitor, and you write for the Mets SB Nation site.
Exactly, yes. And, like, they are hilarious and
so
terrible.
Hilarious.
I adore them. Like, they've brought me immense joy. But I was pretty angry because I realized I was, like, actually upset when they were losing the other day. And that was very, like, frustrating to me because I did, you know, it's like when you have a relationship and it's like you're kind of in the fun, like, chill phase, and then you realize, like, ah, shit, like, this is now serious, and you're not sure whether that's really what you want. That's how I am with the Mets right now.
Yeah,
we're in this, like, weird stage that I'm not really comfortable
all
with.
All of this feels extremely tertiary.
No,
well,
I get it. You ever been in a relationship and then Steven Matz shows up and you're like, no,
exactly.
We terrible. Didn't want this.
Actually, yes. Yeah. It's awkward. He's so tall. Very handsome.
Yeah, he's...
Yeah. Well, and so all of that combined with the fact that all I really wanted from them this year was for Robinson Cano and for Edwin Diaz to have, like, good years, because it really, obviously, as Matthew Penn, thank you, Mets, this has gone great for us. That's fabulous. But, like, this could have been a mutually beneficial situation.
It should have been.
I saw this, because I was looking, I was absentmindedly doing some Edwin Diaz-related searching, just while thinking about this question. Edwin has struck out 42% of opposing hitters in the second half of the season and has a 5.73 ERA. So, like...
Seems bad.
It's just inexplicable to watch these players who we were, like, thought, you know, like, so unbelievably reliable and consistent and delightful just look defeated. Like, I've seen Edwin look defeated, and I hate the Mets for doing that to him, because it's their fault. It's not his. I refuse to believe that he has any blame to be taken in this effort. Mickey Callaway has done something wrong.
Yes.
Put something
Callaway has done a lot of things wrong. I would also blame the new ball to some extent. I think that
certainly
has killed a lot of sliders. So.
Mm-hmm. No, 100%. And Mickey Callaway spits in his punch bowl as well.
Absolutely,
so.
Sure. Yes.
Yeah, before I make my pick, I would like to remind Brody Van Wegenen to accept me on LinkedIn. You coward. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of good ideas, and he's refusing to hear any of them because he doesn't think that I have the business acumen, I guess,
good baseball ideas. Sorry, Matthew.
Oh, boy. All right, my new enemy is not new at all. I've hated him since the moment I became aware of his swampy existence. I am taking the incorrigible Mark Canha of the Oakland Athletics. Hate him a lot. This year, he actually did something that, like, he did, like, an actual action that could lead me to hate him, which was the slide into J.P. Crawford at second base. If you forgot about this.
Savvy? Might you say savvy?
So I wouldn't say that. Mark dare did
I
say that.
Dare I say was the exact. I hate him.
Yeah, to clue everyone in here, this was a pretty ho-hum game. I want to say it was like a weekend day game in Oakland. Mark Canha is sliding into second to break up a double play, and he, without question, sticks his foot out to hit J.P. Crawford.
Like, hooks him.
Yeah, Canha's hand is on the base, and then his foot is like 7 feet away, hooking J.P. Crawford. And then he receives no consequence for it, and then takes to Twitter after the game for one of those, like, one of X threads where he's, like, not sure how long he's going to go. So he starts off, he's like, first of all, great win or whatever, like, go A's. And then he's like, also, if we go to the rule book, like, blah, blah, blah. But the thing that really got under all of our skin was he ends it as, like, his weird, like, conclusion by going, so, you know, all in all, it was a smart and, dare I say, savvy slide. And we all decided that was the worst combination of words anyone has ever put together. And since that very moment, I think he's been the number one enemy of lookoutlanding.com.
Yeah, he's a real fucko.
Yes, which we should also mention while we're just, you know, shoveling dirt onto his grave, that the original hatred from me started upon him coming to Seattle last year for a series. Not great weather, but certainly
fully
not
enrobed in his balaclava.
Yeah. Yes. I was going to say, certainly not great weather, but also not snowing.
Yeah.
He's wearing, like, you couldn't see any of his skin. And, like, that's not an exaggeration. Like, his neck was completely covered, his two sleeves. Like, he looked like he had been, like, punished and was being forced to play baseball in some sort of, like, inclement weather.
It was really some Handmaid's Tale shit.
Yeah, oh my god, yeah. And then he had the Bob Dylan walk-up song, which is like, I don't even hate that song, I just hate it in that context.
And he has an Instagram called, like, MLB Foodie or something like that, where he's always...
So yeah, I've done a lot of sleuthing on there. The Instagram, if you want to hate scroll, is at Big League Foodie. But the worst one is his Twitter is Outta Da Pack Mac. Like, there's no...
Awful.
And he's not from Boston. He's from Oakland. Like, he really leaned into this whole, like, my name's Mac, but he's, like, from the exact city where he's still working. So I don't know what that was all about. He loves the San Jose
Sharks.
He's,
like, the worst person in your office who comes in on Monday and talks about everything he did over the weekend, where he, like, rode one of those beer trolleys around.
Yeah, he loves that.
Yeah, and then had, like, a farm-to-table meal where he was sitting elbow-to-elbow with a local celebrity. But he's not going to drop names. Just know it was an incredibly enlightening conversation. And then he went home and read a little David Foster Wallace before falling asleep.
Yeah, he read, like, 3 pages of it and then decided that he knew enough and didn't need to keep going.
He seems like definitely puts a lot of stinky kombucha into the work fridge. He's the worst.
He seems like the kind of guy who will learn. This is a classic college guy move. He'll learn just enough to have an opinion, but it's not, like, nuanced at all. Like, he has one talking point, and if you challenge him on it, then he's like, well, you know, it's just, like, that's just what I think. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
He doesn't have any
it
way
to back
it.
Can't be wrong. It's just an opinion.
Exactly.
That's to be fair, Jerry DePoto used that line a lot at the town hall where...
which I don't love.
People were giving... Well, I mean, people were like... People were saying nutter butter things. Like, you know, a lot of you should fire Scott Servais because he wasn't able to lead a team that had more talent than this to the playoffs. And then
sure,
he's,
that's much different. Than me telling Mark Canha that Neutral Milk Hotel is not that good. Like, there's different things.
It's your opinion, and therefore it cannot be wrong. I thought that was a very gracious response. Your opinion cannot be wrong. I think that's an excellent thing to say when somebody presents you with some
selective.
Bizarre bullshit. But
yeah, we just hate it if Mark Canha says it.
We hate it if Mark Canha says it, exactly. And I hate that Mark Canha makes me be, like, a little, like, he forces me to be the most cynical, angry version of myself. Because, honestly, I would probably love him if he played for us.
Yeah.
I would just look past all of the pedantry.
We're probably, me and Mark Canha are probably more similar than we are different. And I think he'd be one of those guys where, like, he would start expressing opinions that I agree with, and then I'd start rethinking them. Like, well, maybe I don't even think that. Like, I need to reassess everything that's happening here, because it's like that reductress story. Like, or Clickhole, whatever, like worst guy.
Worst person you know, yes. Terrible news. Worst person you know makes great point. I think, like, what's that old saying that the person that you like the least, the people you hate the most have the qualities you most fear in yourself? So, like, you know, you might be recognizing a shadow aspect of yourself in Mark Hanna. Like, maybe I am a little pretentious sometimes. God. Yeah, I'm sorry. We don't need to take it there. Let's move on to the next category.
All right, final category. This is going to be a rapid-fire one. Don't think too hard. This one is called the Tyler Smith Award for the most forgettable player on the team. There's been a lot to choose from. For those who are unaware, the Mariners quite literally used the most players in a season of any team in the history of this game. So there's a lot of people when you're looking at the BREF page. Even 2 years from now, you will say there is no way that guy existed. Similar to Mariners legend Tyler Smith. So my pick for this
OSU
one...
OSU product.
Huh?
He's a Beaver. He's a Beaver. That's why I knew who he was.
Oh, sure. I didn't even know that.
He has some kind of legacy. But anyway,
you could have said any college in the continental United States.
All right, let's go.
Yes. So, yeah, most forgettable Mariner. My personal favorite is Mike Wright, who pushed...
Oh, Mike Wright Jr. He wanted Mike to Wright be called Jr. Mike Wright Jr. Yeah.
Apologies to his father, I guess. Mike Wright, who had the unfortunate distinction of playing for both the 2019 Baltimore Orioles and the 2019 Seattle Mariners.
You know it's a bad pickup when Orioles fans are making fun of you for making it. Mm. Yeah, right. That was a rough one.
He's still in the org.
Yeah, he went to Tacoma. Either. They're trying to iron some stuff out, I think, with him.
Keep working. I'm going to go, I think, see... I think there are some, like, clear, just, like, occasionally appeared players, but, like, I legitimately, at the time, it wasn't forgettable, but at this point, like, we did the whole Sporkle thing, and I 100% forgot about Zach Roscup. And I feel great about that, but...
I feel great that that's not taking up space in my brain.
Yeah, so Zach Roscup, because, like, Zach Roscup, like, got a MLB deal and, like... was awful, and then was literally released, which is hard to do, and then got signed by the Dodgers, and then I think released again. And I don't totally get why he keeps getting signed, because he's not really ever been good.
No, and he's part of the absolute dying breed of loogie. Like, he's a true
total
loogie,
but like... cannot throw strikes, and I guess strikes people out, but like, I don't know. He's got absolutely horrible timing, and so that was my most forgettable one. Who every time he came in, I was unhappy, and
I
burned the memory out of my brain the moment he got released.
That's Corey Guerin for me, but yes, absolutely. That's fair. Corey Guerin was better than Zach Roscoe, which is like saying a punch in the thigh is better than a kick to the kneecap. But mine
Who's
is
punching your thigh.
I don't know. I was just trying to think of something that wouldn't hurt as badly, but would still.
No,
suck.
You're right. Absolutely. It's just I'm trying
to. I don't
to
know, man. So. I would maybe go with a paper Mariner, someone who has never actually played in a game but was technically in the organization for the year, in Aroldis Vizcaíno.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
That, I think, would have to be... That's, like, a deep-cut Sporkle quiz. But as far as, like, somebody who actually played games for the org, Mac Williamson would be mine.
Oh, see, I saw Mac Williamson. He hit the home run in his first plate appearance.
Yeah, he sure did that, but he was also just bad. He was so terrible.
He was so terrible.
Really bad. And he was blocking guys in Tacoma who I wanted to come up. I mean, that was like the height of, why don't you call up Ian Miller, you fuckers? And I'm glad Ian Miller is getting run in Minnesota now. Go Twins. Big Twins backer for the playoffs, but... I mean, when they were calling up Mac Williamson over Ian Miller, I was like, oh, God, Ian Miller will never wear a Mariners uniform. Sad moment for me. So probably I'll remember him for that as being the person who stood in that way. But, definitely someone I'd like to forget.
Yeah. Mack Williamson was on the team at the time when I was still watching fairly often, so I have a troubling amount of memories of him just being pretty vanilla. Like, he hit the home run, and then I would be watching the game, like, pretty invested, and then he would come up, and I'd be like, what? Like, he's still here? Absolutely. Like, I thought he had been traded mid-game. It's weird to, like, forget about a person while you're watching the game that they're playing in, and that was exactly him.
He was, like, one of the greatest disparities between, like, buffness and productivity. Like, his biceps were gigantic.
Yeah, and I might give that to Keon Broxton, honestly.
I mean, that's fair, but Keon Broxton at least was good, like, an elite defensive player. Like, Mack Williamson was
not. Yeah, he was nothing.
Elite at anything? Yeah.
Yeah, well, we hope this podcast brought you some value, and you will not forget about it years down the road. We are, I think, podcast-wise, we're a level above Tyler Smith. No disrespect to Tyler Smith or his family, but...
Big talk.
I mean, I think we're at that point now. I'm at the point in my career where I can start talking shit, and that's a fun time for anyone. So, Tyler Smith,
we're definitely at the point of the season.
I think you gotta wait for Brody Van Wingenden to accept you on LinkedIn first.
If that happens, we're doing an emergency podcast where people just will live tweet me things to say to him on LinkedIn, and I will absolutely do it all. But before that happens, thank you for listening, and if you have any awards you'd like to add, shoot us a message on Twitter. We have a lot of space for just nonsense here, as these are not real awards, and we will not be giving them to any of the players, because some of them were rude, so we don't want that to hurt their feelings. But thank you, John, for joining us all the way from the East Coast, which is in the future. Yeah. People don't realize that.
Shoot, it's 10:40 over here.
Woo, wild.
Wow. All right, well, that's another sparkling edition of the Lookout Landing podcast. Thank you, as always. I am on Twitter at mroberson22. I was joined by the lovely editors of this site, John Troopin and Kate Prusser. And we will talk to you next time once we come up with another thing to discuss, because we are running out of ideas.
And baseball.
And baseball.